Welcome to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. I'll be reading the program notes for all of the Classical Music Series concerts by the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2019 season. The program notes I'm reading today are for the performance by the North Carolina Symphony at 7:30 p.m. Thursday, February 7th at Memorial Hall, UNC Chapel Hill, and at 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday, February 8th and 9th at Maymandy Concert Hall, Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts in Raleigh. This concert will be conducted by Grant Llewellyn. The featured soloist is the North Carolina Symphony's own Associate Concertmaster, Dovid Friedlander. The program on this performance will include the following. The symphony comes onto the stage to perform The Invitation to the Dance, Opus 65, by Carl Maria von Weber. And next, The Beautiful on the Beautiful Blue Danube, Opus 314, by Johann Strauss, Jr., and then Dances of Galanta, by Zoltán Kodály. Then, following the intermission, the North Carolina Symphony returns to the stage with Dovid Friedlander to perform the Russian dance and finale from Swan Lake. Then, the overture, waltz, and finale from Powder Her Face by Thomas Addis. And finally, La Valse Poème Choreographique by Maurice Ravel. And now I'll begin reading our symphony notes for this performance. First, some information about our featured soloist. Dovid Friedlander has been the Associate Concertmaster of the North Carolina Symphony since 2005. Before coming to Raleigh, he played with the Columbus Symphony Orchestra and Assistant Concertmaster with the San Antonio Symphony. Other performing experiences include the Boston Symphony Orchestra at Tanglewood Music Festival and the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. Friedlander has performed as a soloist with the North Carolina Symphony each season, including the rarely played and rhythmically difficult Hindemith's Kammermusik No. 4, Mozart's 4th and 5th Violin Concertos, Ravel's Siegen, and Wieniawski's Violin Concerto No. 2, and Vivaldi's Four Seasons as well. In November 2018, Friedlander was asked to perform as guest concertmaster with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra, and in January 2019, he performed Prokofiev's Violin Concerto No. 1 with the Winston-Salem Symphony. He can also be found performing chamber music around the city of Raleigh through existing concert series and his own series, Classical Hang. By founding his own series, Friedlander is able to share his love for chamber music repertoire in a relaxed atmosphere while enjoying a beer and seeing friends. In addition to this, he has performed chamber music with Branford Marsalis, Clara Yang, Attar Arad, members of the Chompy String Quartet, and Christopher Taylor. Beginning at the age of 9, Friedlander attended the Meadowmount School of Music 8 summers in a row. As a college student, he studied at Eastman School of Music and the Cleveland Institute of Music. A self-proclaimed violin nerd, he loves to study and talk about violins and bows. Every trip must include a visit to the local violin shop to try out bows. He currently plays on a Joseph Curtin violin from 1996 and plays an early Eugene Sartori bow from 1905. When he is not on stage, he enjoys spending time with his wife Tracy and daughter Violet and has completed dozens of triathlons. Now for the program, the North Carolina Symphony comes onto the stage to perform Invitation to the Dance, Opus 65 by Carl Maria von Weber. Von Weber was born November 18, 1786, in Eutin, Germany, and he died June 5, 1826, in London. This work was composed in 1819 and orchestrated by Berlioz in 1841. The first performance date is unknown. Now here's the overview. Like Hector Berlioz, the composer, conductor, and pianist Carl Maria Friedrich Ernst von Weber was also a music critic, forerunner of the German Romantic aesthetic movement. His opera Der Freischütz laid the foundation for German Romantic opera, paving the way for Wagner. Also like Berlioz, Weber was an innovative orchestrator, discovering and capitalizing on new characteristics and sonorities of many instruments, especially the horn and clarinet. Composed for piano solo in the summer of 1819 for Weber's young wife, Invitation to the Dance is an early example of program music, a genre that grew out of the romantic aesthetic. Weber himself specified the narrative. At a ball, a gentleman approaches a lady who evades him. He presses his invitation and she relents. They converse sympathetically, take their places for the dance, and then swirl happily away. At the end, they say thank you to each other and withdraw, leaving only silence and the memory of an exhilarating experience. Well, in 1841, the Paris Opera decided to produce a French translation of Der Freischütz. According to rigid convention, French grand opera, as opposed to comic opera, prohibited spoken dialogue and mandated a ballet, whether it was appropriate to the plot or not. Berlioz, Weber's leading champion in France, was asked to substitute recitative for the spoken dialogue and compose a ballet. Now, here's what to listen for. Berlioz refused to include any music in the ballet other than Weber's own. To this end, he orchestrated Invitation to the Dance, remaining scrupulously faithful to Weber's original. The orchestration is a fine example of Berlioz's mastery in this field. Imaginative and varied, it enhances Weber's original without ever drawing attention to itself. Now, the instrumentation for this work is as follows. It's for piccolo, two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, four bassoons, four horns, four trumpets, three trombones, timpani, two harps, and strings. Next on the program, the symphony performs On the Beautiful Blue Danube, Opus 314 by Johann Strauss, Jr. Strauss was born October 25, 1825, near Vienna, and he died June 3, 1899, also in Vienna. This work was composed in 1866, and the first performance was February 16, 1867, in Vienna, with the Wiener Mahner Gesangsverein, the Vienna Men's Choral Association. Now here is the overview. Johann Strauss, Jr., by far the best known of the 19th century Vienna's composers of dance music, was adored by high society and fondly known as the Waltz King. He was by nature shy, self-effacing, and insecure, far removed in nature from the lightheartedness and exuberance expressed in his music. He was a close friend of Brahms, who always tried to convince him that posterity would remember his music, but to no avail. Brahms, however, got it right. Strauss originally composed On the Beautiful Blue Danube for a celebration of the Viennese Men's Choral Society, but when it premiered, the response was only lukewarm. It was the orchestral version that sold millions of copies in the composer's lifetime. Now, here's what to listen for. The Viennese waltz, as perfected by the Strauss dynasty, consisted of several sections of different melodies, sometimes repeated, sometimes occurring only once. The signature opening of this waltz is never repeated. The instrumentation for the waltz is piccolo, two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, four horns, two trumpets, bass trombone, tuba, timpani, percussion, harp, and strings. Next, the North Carolina Symphony performs The Dances of Galanta by Zoltán Kodály. Kodály was born December 12, 1882, in Hungary. He died March 6, 1967, in Budapest. The work was composed in 1933, the first performance October 23, 1933, in Budapest, the Budapest Symphony Orchestra, under the direction of Erno Dohányi. Here's the overview. Composers have always loved to integrate folk melodies into their works, both for popular appeal and to show their ability to manipulate a simple tune. The practice was already common in the Middle Ages. However, in the 18th and 19th centuries, they often made the mistake of equating the popular music of the day with authentic folk melodies. Now, the melodies that Brahms and Liszt used in their Hungarian dances and rhapsodies, for example, were not indigenous melodies, but were the popular street and cafe music of their time, often played by Roma bands. Zoltán Kodály and his colleague Béla Bartók, both pioneers of modern ethnomusicology, were among the first, in 1907 actually, to use a newfangled invention, the wax cylinder recorder, to collect folk melodies at their source. Like Bartók, Kodály used many of the collected folk melodies as themes for his compositions. Of the two, Kodály was the more conservative and the more romantic. Kodály's ethnomusicological research, notwithstanding, the themes for dances of Galanta did indeed originate from street and cafe music. Galanta, a small town in Slovakia, was part of Hungary when Kodály lived there as a child. In the 18th century, Galanta had a large number of Roma musicians who performed from notated scores rather than from memory and played in the orchestras of the gentry. The themes for the dances of Galanta came from a historical collection, Selected Hungarian National Dances of Various Gypsies from Galanta. Kodály selected five different melodies and rhythms, giving them a brilliant orchestral dressing that provided a special showcase for the upper winds. Now here's what to listen for. The five dances employ different modes, themes, and rhythms, but they are strung together in such a way that the final measures of one dance serve as an introduction to the next. The opening dance begins with a long introduction that has the effect of a warm-up or flexing of musical muscles. The first three dances feature an orchestral soloist. In the first movement, the clarinet introduces a slow modal theme, while the second features the flute, and finally blending seamlessly into the third, which features the oboe and contains a dialogue between the upper winds and strings. The fourth dance pits the violins against the upper winds as the dance becomes wilder and wilder. Well, suddenly everything shifts gears with a pompous interruption from the lower brass slipping into the final dance. The tempo is fast, with the theme bouncing around the entire orchestra and including notes from the previous dances. The instrumentation for this work is piccolo, two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, four horns, two trumpets, timpani, percussion, and strings. Following the intermission, the North Carolina Symphony returns to the stage to perform Selections from Swan Lake, Opus 20, by Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky. Tchaikovsky was born May 7, 1840, in Votkinsk, Russia, and he died November 6, 1893, in St. Petersburg. The work was composed in 1875 in the first performance, March 4, 1877, in Moscow at the Bolshoi Theater. Now here is the overview. In the summer of 1871, Tchaikovsky spent some time at his sister's family home. For the entertainment of the children, he composed and staged a scene called Swan Lake for a cast consisting of his niece and nephew, his brother Modest, and wooden toy swans. Now, the source of the story and of the scenario is unknown, although it contains archetypical elements recognizable throughout European folk literature. Virtually nothing is known about the music from the scene, but family lore claims that it contained the principal swan motif that eventually made its way into the now iconic ballet commissioned in the spring of 1875. Short of money and still struggling for recognition in his own country, although rapidly gaining a reputation abroad, Tchaikovsky returned to the story of Swan Lake, in whose somber ending he saw a reflection of his own dark moods. Its premiere in March 1877 was an unmitigated disaster, partly because of Bolshoi political infighting and partly because of the inadequacy of the choreographer, the conductor, dancers, and the orchestra. But the ballet was a revolutionary work. Its intensely dramatic score was so demanding on all involved that music from other composers was increasingly substituted for Tchaikovsky's original score. It was finally dropped from the Bolshoi repertoire after 1883. Tchaikovsky himself never saw a satisfactory performance of the complete work, although he was present at a production of the second act in 1889 in Prague that gave him one brief moment of unalloyed happiness. The instrumentation for this work is for piccolo, two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, four horns, two trumpets, two cornets, three trombones, tuba, timpani, percussion, harp, piano, and strings. The next featured work by the North Carolina Symphony is Dances from Powder Her Face by Thomas Otis. Otis was born March 1, 1971, in London, and this work was composed in 1995, the first performance July 1, 1995, at the Cheltenham Music Festival. Here is the overview. Sex and scandal retain perpetual fascination, even decades after those directly involved have sunk into obscurity. Powder Her Face, Thomas Otis's chamber opera for four singers and 15 players, composed in 1995, is loosely based on the once notorious Dirty Duchess, Margaret Campbell, Duchess of Argyll, from 1912 to 1993. The daughter of a Scottish millionaire raised in New York, she was debutante of the year in 1930 and became a well-known socialite. Her divorce trial in the 1960s revealed her scandalous bedroom behavior with members of the British government, supported with Polaroids. The trial and scandal, however, did not deter her from continuing her extravagant lifestyle. Eventually, she was forced to sell her home and live in a hotel suite. She ended her days penniless in a nursing home. The opera is a fictionalized pastiche of events in Margaret's career. Otis's score combines stylistic elements of Alban Berg, Astor Piazzolla's tangos, and mid-century popular music. Now here's what to listen for. In 2007, Otis expanded the orchestration of the overture, waltz, and finale from Powder Her Face for full symphony orchestra. It represents a miniature of the Duchess's world. The overture, a tango dominated by sneering, often guffawing glissandi, evokes the hotel staff mocking the Duchess and her promiscuous past. The following waltz suggests her faded glory, now reduced to a hallucinogenic dreamscape. The syncopated finale further distorts the waltz, breaking down the dreamscape until finally turning off her lights, literally in mid-phrase. Born in London, British composer, conductor, and pianist Thomas Otis graduated from King's College, Cambridge. He is currently the Britten Professor of Composition at the Royal Academy of Music. The instrumentation for this work is as follows: for piccolo, three flutes, three oboes, three clarinets, bass clarinet, two bassoons, contrabassoon, four horns, three trumpets, three trombones, tuba, timpani, percussion, harp, piano, and strings. And the final work to be performed by the North Carolina Symphony in this concert is La Valse, Poème Choreographique by Maurice Ravel. Ravel was born March 7, 1875 in Cibourg, France. He died December 28, 1937 in Paris. This work was composed in 1919 and 1920. The first performance, December 12, 1920, in Paris, the Lamoureux Orchestra, under the direction of Camille Chevillard. Here is the overview. Ravel is said to have described La Valse as a fantastic and fatefully inescapable whirlpool. On the score, he added the stage direction, an imperial court, about 1855. The date was chosen deliberately. At the time Ravel took up his pen to complete his work, begun before the war, the Austro-Hungarian Empire had just suffered its final defeat. In the Vienna of 1855, the Habsburg court maintained a show of glittering joie de vivre, the city dancing on a volcano, swayed to the waltzes and operettas of the Strauss family. Economically, this was the most brilliant and prosperous period of the monarchy. With the hindsight of 1919, however, Ravel had a clear picture of the empire's decadence. La Valse was premiered as an orchestral work in 1920 to great success. Sergei Diaghilev, the impresario of the Ballets Russes, had urged Ravel to complete the work, but was unhappy with it and never staged it. It was finally staged in Paris in 1928 in the style of an elegant festive ball set in the Paris of the Second Empire during the 1860s. Finally, in 1951, George Balanchine gave it the choreographic interpretation that expressed Ravel's original intention of the inescapable whirlpool. Now here's what to listen for. The atmosphere of the music is thoroughly Viennese, although Ravel composed it before he ever visited the city. The opening follows closely the scenic directive Ravel added to the score. Clouds whirl about. Occasionally they part to allow a glimpse of waltzing couples. As the clouds lift, one can see a gigantic hall filled by a crowd of moving dancers. The stage gradually brightens and the glow of the chandeliers breaks out fortissimo. The dance becomes wilder and wilder, a rhythmic and dynamic tour de force. The dancers lose control and are swept in a terrific whirlwind. It is a frightening, deathly riot, cut off at the end as if by a bolt of lightning. The instrumentation for this work is piccolo, three flutes, three oboes, English horn, two clarinets, bass clarinet, two bassoons, contrabassoon, four horns, three trumpets, three trombones, tuba, timpani, percussion, two harps, and strings. These program notes were written and copyrighted in 2019 by Joseph and Elizabeth Kahn. You have been listening to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I will be reading all of the program notes from the classical music series of the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2019 season. This program is available on demand as a podcast on the day before each concert series and will be available for the remainder of the concert season. I'm George Douglas. Thank you for joining me today. We sincerely hope that listening to Symphony Notes will enhance your enjoyment of your North Carolina Symphony. Goodbye until next time.